Getting started, friends. Everybody's having a good time visiting, and I hate to shut it down. I am Bruce Rothel today because Bruce is traveling, and I will just tell you now, he gave me the option to teach Habakkuk for him or to go back to my lessons that we had started off with the Lord's Prayer and what are the definition of God's kingdom. And now our next section, what's called Unit 2, is going to be community. And so I had the option to teach his stuff or my stuff, and I demurred because it was Habakkuk. And the last time I taught Habakkuk, I was probably 24, and it was a disaster. So Bruce will have to tell you about all that next week. Welcome, everybody. Good morning. It's such a beautiful morning. A little cool out there. But I like it cool, so it's a beautiful morning as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to go through any announcements, but I would direct your attention to the include in your bulletin. This is our LTC students, and this is a summary of what each of our LTC kids achieved when they went to Arkansas a few weeks ago. And if you don't mind, cast your eye on that this morning. I think these accomplishments of where you see gold, that is a lot of work to get a gold. And if you have some time to encourage Casey Martinez, she really was critical in organizing, getting our kids over there, getting everybody in the right vehicle, bringing everyone home who we took. So if you had some time to encourage Casey this week and to thank her for her efforts, I would consider that a favor because she put a lot of heart into that, into those activities. Okay, we're actually going to be starting in Genesis, and we're in Acts. We're moving around a little bit this morning, and because of our lesson, I think that's appropriate. The lesson title is Recognizing Our Community, and I apologize, guys. In my mind, knew Bruce was going to be out the 16th, but somehow I, all week long, thought the 16th was far away. And so I did not retouch my slides. These are old, and some of these might not be the best background and color contrast. So I apologize. Several times people teaching in here have asked me to make sure I use a black slide on a white background. And so some of these are not because I didn't have a chance to retouch them. So if you have trouble seeing these, it's my fault. I just didn't get that done this week because it wasn't until sometime last night that I realized, oh, it's me tomorrow. But we're going to start off, and our key verse is in Acts 2, 44 and 45. All the believers were together, and they had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. I'm an unrepentant capitalist, and it's quite hard for me to read that. Whenever I read they had all things in common, I want to put a little disclaimer down there that says, except for their homes, or except for their favorite possessions, or, but it does not, the scripture does not say that. And my capitalism is a stumbling block for me, and we're going to talk more about that later. I think it's a fun lesson to get into with a child of the 80s, such as myself. How would you define community? Give me a definition of community. Commune, what's that mean? Glenpool. Okay, what was that back?
Living close together.
Co-living. Glenpool would be a perfect definition of our community. Our building is in the city limits of Glenpool. I think that's true. Is that true? If that's true, how does Jack burn brush over there? Well, that's not. Sorry, I don't want to say on camera that Jack Lyerly burns brush. He's outside of it. Jack's going to wish he'd stayed in Texas if I pick on him today, so I'm going to stop that right now because we're glad he's back. Glenpool, what else is our community? How many of us here live in Glenpool city limits? Put your hand up. Six? Okay. Yeah, that's about what I feel like. And for you, those of you on camera, there's 20 of us in this room, and six of us live in Glenpool. So let's go back to the definition. What is our community? Where you're at? People you live around? Do you remember the passage when they asked Jesus, well, who's my neighbor? Then who is my neighbor? This is the who is my neighbor problem. And because the law, and I think even more so the fulfillment of the law in Jesus, requires us to treat our neighbor so wonderfully. I mean wonderfully. I don't mean good. I don't mean friendly. We are called to treat our neighbors in a wonderful way. Knowing who our neighbor is so important for that. And if you want to disobey God, have some confusion in your mind about who your neighbor is, so later you can use that as an excuse. I do not recommend this as a strategy, by the way. But we do it. We do it because we don't have a precise definition of community. So I want to be careful about that because, again, I don't think that's a long-term solution to this problem. So name at least one community that you claim. Some people have raised their hand and said they're in Glenpool. Anybody else got a different community? Anyone live in Tulsa proper, city limits? Tulsa area? Jinx? We got a lot of Jinx people here. Any other communities? Anybody? Yo, Jim. Military community. Yeah, so as a veteran, Jim may hang around and drink coffee and play dominoes. That's gambling. With veterans occasionally. And how many veterans clubs do we have around here? It's fascinating. My daughter came home yesterday. She went out and got donuts in Bixby, and she said there's some veterans playing music at the donut shop in Bixby. Well, the donut shop in Bixby, you can hardly turn around in there. And I almost got in my car and drove down there to see that they how many musicians they could cram into that donut shop. But she said that was part of their community services, a group of retired veterans that did music in there on Saturday mornings. I don't know how long that's been going on, but these are veterans who are musicians. If we did a Venn diagram, are you familiar with the circles that overlap? If we did a Venn diagram, that would be the veteran community with the musician community with the donut shop flunkies. Who hangs out at donut shops? I've been that guy before, huh? I'm not going to, huh? So I'm a member. I'll just tell you guys, I'm a member of a group called the Midwest Tool Collectors Association, I'm not obsessed about it, but I inherited a bunch of tools when my grandfather passed, and they were hand tools, old, from some strange makers that I'd never heard of before. And as I got involved trying to find out what these were, I found myself going to these impossible to describe meetings of generally old dudes sitting around talking about tool companies that have been out of business since the early 1900s. And I'm making it sound a little more exciting than it is. It's actually a little bit slower paced in person. But there are fervent debates about how much carbon steel Bailey put in their plane irons before Stanley took them over and ruined everything in 1889. Or there was an Ohio tool company that made a hand plane that they think that Bailey ripped off and Stanley bought. And just a huge, you talk about minutia and esoterica, weird little nuances that these groups pass on knowledge to each other. And it was so funny because I would have been considered a young member of that community when I joined. And now I realize how quickly time has flown, and I go to meetings and we all have gray hair. So that's a community that I feel like I belong to and have given and taken from freely. Given and taken from. Do you notice how easily I slipped that in there? I took knowledge from these people. I had questions when I first got there. and they helped me. And then over time, I ended up helping other people. And from time to time, somebody will come up and say, is this a type 7 or a type 8 joiner's plane? And I will say, well, just look here. You can tell by the Japanning. The Japanning switched over, and it's enamel painted. So this is going to be a type 8 because yours is not Japanned. The finish is, doesn't have asphaltium in it. And it's such a bizarre set of information, but I give it back as it was given to me because I'm part of that community. So how many different communities do you feel like you belong to? Everybody go to a family reunion of your family lately? Anybody go to your in-laws' family reunion? You don't quite belong to that one, do you? But you go. I hope they treat you good. 10? 5? Anybody in here who's not a joiner? You don't consider yourself a joiner? I buy that, Harry. Sue Ann. So, but you still belong. You're here this morning. You got up today. I find that fascinating. What characteristics do you think are important for a healthy community?
Honesty.
I like it. Does it, Jim?
Similar goals.
Yes. If I were to meet with the anarchist community and we get together and we make pipe bombs, we have clear-cut goals. We're going to destroy infrastructure and we're going to level all governments, right? That would bind us together as a community. Now, whether you don't want me to join the anarchist community, do you? But they would have similar goals. So let's talk about that. What if the goals of my community were just terrible? What if it was horrible? Marlboro had that points thing where you get so many cigarette UPC codes and turn them in and you can get a leather jacket. Does anyone remember that? They would market this stuff to kids. That's a community. But I don't agree with the thing they're doing there, do I? Selling cool stuff to kids to get them started smoking. I'm against everything they stand for. Does that make sense? But they're a community. And so, switching channels, a community needs to be able to have new members, I think. And why am I arguing that? Yeah, so, and I'm going to go back to my Midwest Tool Collectors Association. I cannot tell you how many times we've auctioned off these old men's tools. It's a point at which I don't even want to pay attention anymore. I mean, there's some good tools in there, I'm sure, but I'm over it because we've lost 80 members that I know of, and I don't know who the replacements are. The generation under me could care less about hand tools. They don't want to get a callus. Jim. Yes? So in our community, one way that we can replace ourselves is babies, right? But we're in trouble there because the Catholics are going to beat us at that game every time. Have you seen how many kids they have? They got them everywhere. Last week, and you're not wrong, though. You're not wrong. Raising up children in faith, I think, is important. Last week, we had 4 families that had no association with our church visit. And that could also be our replacements. I will tell you that right now. Because some of us are not going to be popping out any more kids. But that's also a valid replacement. Okay, all right, moving forward. Everyone needs a community. Okay, you guys who, when I said to anybody in here not a joiner, true or false? Everyone needs a community. Jim says it's true. Anyone else? Anybody want to take false? Now, Randy, I know for a fact you can argue both sides of any issue. Not with equal sincerity, but you can't argue. Contentious. I like that about you. Okay, so we feel like we might. So why do we need a community? So, Larry has a very practical answer. We band together and form these communities because there's things we need. We want to have streets. And if me and my neighbor put gravel down in the road between our two houses, that doesn't solve very big of a problem, does it? It gets him to my house and me to him. But it doesn't do anything for the greater community. Who links up to the highway? Who provides sewers? Who digs the new wells? And so one of the things we do as cities and counties is we provide common services, what we would consider to be utility-level services. And I know that's not exciting to talk about, but it's important. And here at Glenpool, I would say we're doing some utility things as well. We've got teachers teaching children back down the hall. And we can teach 10 children with one teacher and leave 20 parents free to go to a class of their own. That's been wildly popular with us, just so you know. So many of these parents need to go to a Bible class because they're growing and learning in their own right. And if they're spending Sunday morning teaching their own kids, it's going to be that flannel grass level of education. And instead of some deep Bible scholar talk, which is what's happening down there in the Seekers class this morning. Okay, I didn't get any disagreement on that. I was hoping to get a little. That's okay. Genesis 2:18, then the Lord said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make a helper fit for him." When you think about it, why do you think God said it wasn't good for man to be alone? He had that one man, right? And a idyllic environment for that man. Comfort and encouragement. What I find fascinating about loners is every loner I've ever seen only was existing because of a greater community. During the pandemic, you could hole up in your house and stay there 24/7 as long as you had groceries delivered. As long as Amazon brought you a new Swiffer or air filter or whatever you need. And so what I find fascinating, even trying to be solo, we're reliant on others. And in the modern world, people who express themselves as a loner have an awful lot of infrastructure underneath them. What does it say about God that the people he made need each other? What's that? That it is good to need each other. Now, men, are you comfortable with that? I just called out every man in this room and said, "You're needy." Is that all right? You are whether you think you are or not. Yeah, you remember the last time you got sick? You talk about a big, strong man turning into an absolute baby. Give him the sniffles. Give him a few body aches. Give him a real health challenge. What's that? Get real old. I assume it gets better, that I just get healthier and healthier as I get older. Is that the case? God made people to need each other. I think we need to remember that, church. And I think we need to remember it just simply as that. And I think some of the people who come here seeking, I know that they're seeking God. But I think they're seeking maybe a community. And I think they have needs they can articulate. And I think those needs might come from our Creator. And so we're pretty good at greeting new folks here. And I was so proud of how you guys handled our visitors for Easter. But that's part of our job, right? As a community, that's a big part of our job. So why is it important for you to have a community? Mr. Jim? So Jim's point is that during COVID, our children especially, were missing out on some community that they normally get, some fellowship with each other, some time together, and we're now seeing all sorts of social problems. And I apologize that I'm using such a generic label, but we're seeing all sorts of health problems and psychological challenges and lots of problems from, we think now, that are stemming from the isolation of COVID. And to be honest with you guys, I think the masks weren't helping anybody. I think covering up part of the human face can be dehumanizing. If you talk to these children that are left alone as infants and they don't get to see smiling faces at them, they're in orphanages where they're not cared for well, and where they are cared for, nobody's smiling at them. That hurts their development. It's fascinating if you get into the science behind it, but the idea of picking up an infant and smiling at it, we all do it instinctively, right? We look at these little babies and we just want to smile at them and pinch their toes. And it's such a benevolent activity. But the absence of that causes great problems later in life. If you want to cry sometime, look up RAD. I think it's relational affective disorder. I might be saying that wrong, but look up RAD sometime and go to the root causes of RAD in young people. And is this something that somebody it can happen to them in their first years of life, and they'll never be a well-adjusted social person again? Mr. Jim, you had your hand up. No, we do, and the fact that we need that feedback goes back to our Creator. That baby doesn't have any status. That Evelyn, I like to get her to smile at me when she's bouncing around with her mother. Well, she's not very popular. She's not very influential. She's not wealthy. There's not a thing she can do for me. But I would make a fool out of myself to get her to smile, wouldn't I? And you've seen me do it. It's a need I have. And I'm not sure that my need is for me. I think God put a need in me to let her know that she's welcome here and she's loved here and she's safe here. And I think that's our community coming out, if that makes any sense. To back that up, let's go back into some scripture. Acts 2, 42 through 47. And again, I apologize. I know this is going to be too small to read on the board. Acts 2, 42 through 47. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship and the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. Is that the most beautiful picture of a community you've seen in a long time? What was that community devoted to?
Each other.
They were serving. They were teaching. They were breaking bread together. They were praying together. So people were being trained in prayer. The old timers were serving to demonstrate to the newcomers. Everybody was living together, learning. Possessions, and this is where I'm going to start sweating a little bit. their possessions were sold and given away to people. This, and I say this pocket knife. Now, I love this knife. I have about three of these, so I don't actually know which one this is. But this, if I, unless I'm unconscious, this knife is with me. When I wake up and put my wallet in my pocket, this knife goes with me everywhere. I love this knife. This is the same idea of that Swiss Army knife I had when I was a kid. Gentlemen, back me up. Do you remember your first pocket knife you got? It's a thing with guys, and this may be just a man thing. But if a man is healthy and well-adjusted and out and about, he should have a blade on him. And I have two boys, and I taught them, if you're vertical, you have a knife in your pocket, right? Put your shoes are on. Don't run around outside without shoes on, and have a knife in your pocket at all times. And so to me, this is a prized possession, to the point of coveting my knife. I'm very fond of my knife. That I would sell it because somebody had a need is a stretch for me. I'm sure you all have a different prized possession, maybe something that's really valuable, not just a piece of steel with a handle on it. But I have trouble with that. But I don't have any trouble believing it happened. And I don't have any trouble believing that if I was in a community that had those needs and they were that present and obvious, that I would participate properly and I would get rid of that thing. Notice I put it on a chair so it didn't land on the floor. And I don't know, you all have your own prized possession, but so be thinking about whatever that is for you. How did the early church community depend on one another? What did we just read about? Yep. Food, clothing, any need, physical needs, spiritual needs. We just talked about they prayed together and learned. Is it important for community members to depend on one another? Larry talks about he grew up in a small town in Arkansas, and about half the members of that town were members of the church, and they depended on each other for everything. Do you think that people who weren't members of the church knew in that town if they had a need that the church would be able to help them? So these communities develop a reputation, and I've heard that story 100 times, and I don't doubt it ever. We interviewed a preacher. In a small town in Oklahoma, and I won't get too detailed on the town, but in his town, the local denominational church started asking for help with funerals from the Church of Christ. And he was like, okay, but if you don't mind me asking, explain the need to me. Well, our people don't make homemade food anymore. We don't have any people who have their own kitchen now. And our people really like it when you cook for our mourners in our funeral. And it tore me up to hear that, because it was a story of a community that was so helpful and so good, and the other was the story of a community that hadn't been recruiting, can I say it that way? That maybe was aging out of tasks, and there was none to be done. And so it chilled me to hear that story. It was fascinating, but I've It was a portrait of two communities. I'll just put it that way. So it is important for us to depend on each other, Larry asserts. Any other comments? If you take help from somebody, do you grow closer to them? Whether you wanted to or not? Do you ever take help from somebody who you didn't want to help you? I met an old guy in the airport one time, and he literally needed help getting his belongings together. He was sick, and he actually was trying to tell me, "I don't need your help," but he couldn't even say the words, "I don't need your help," as I was carrying his tray with his shoes and his belt over to him as he sat down. I could tell he was letting me know, "I don't need your help," and it just made me smile because I thought, you are just as proud as I am. Maybe I'm prouder, but you're close, because he wanted to let me know, "I don't need your help," while I was helping him. And just know, he really actually needed help in that moment. But he wasn't interested in help from me. He just was not interested. I'm as a stranger. He didn't want to be in my debt. I get it. I get all that. I have that kind of manly pride. If I take help from somebody, they'll be able to tell that story forever. I mean, oh my goodness. Does giving help to somebody bring you closer to them? I think it does. I think it does if you do it right. I think it does if you give it. Now, if somebody's in a bad way and we see that as an opportunity to negotiate something, if my capitalism comes out and I say, someone's at a disadvantage, I'm going to get something here out of this. Woe unto me. Woe unto me. I was telling Larry a story earlier about a man that I met when I was a young business person who told me, an entrepreneur who's a Christian has a different standard. A business person who's a Christian has a whole different set of priorities. And as a young person, it sort of hit me hard. Wait a minute, it's even harder than just starting a business? It's even harder than just making my way? It's even harder than just making a profit? But the truth is, God's precepts make things easier, not harder. But it includes not being a parasite on somebody when they're in trouble. And so I stand before you and say, my natural inclination is capitalism. But I wouldn't try to take money from somebody who's having a bad day. Right? That would make me a fool. That would make me somebody who is interested in some short-term gain. But I would be risking long-term judgment. Does that make sense? I'm not going to tell you where the line is in your own life. But I will tell you, there's a line in my life. And I don't want to get anywhere near it. I don't want to get anywhere near it. So even though I say I want people to eat because they worked, I won't watch anybody starve. Does that make sense? Jim, I know you struggle with capitalism and Christianity just like I do. How do we merge them? Panhandlers. Yeah. And that's your son gave money. Sure, if you give money to a panhandler and then you try to create some sort of social contract, now promise me that you'll only use this for rice and beans. Because I'm sorry, I was taught when you're poor, rice and beans will fill you right up for very little money. And I know that. That's not a theory. That's true. And if I give that guy money and say, promise me you'll only drink water and eat rice and beans until you get back on your feet, that might help that person. But I'm not giving them anything. I'm selling them some advice or something. I'm trying to run their life. So Jim, I think you and your son especially are nicer to panhandlers than I am. I'm just going to say that right now. I don't hit them with my car, but my window doesn't come down unless it strikes me just right. I just see them with that backpack that's full of food because everyone gives them food, and they hide that as quick as possible. I see too many. I just think like a con man instead of thinking like Jesus, who probably would be like, "What do you really need? What help did you really need, young person or old person, as the case may be?" Yeah, yeah, that's rough. Yeah. And how far are we from destitution? The economy right now is kind of a mess in this country. For years, I lamented at how low the interest rates were because I saw these World War II widows whose husbands left them plenty of money, but interest rates were zero. So there was no income on that. And now interest rates are going up. It's hard for me to say hooray because inflation is out of control. So I don't know how young people do it. I've got two young people who were on opposite ends of that spectrum. Ethan's doing okay. He's got plenty of money in the bank. Eli's just starting out but is married. And I just don't understand how a young married couple is supposed to buy a house these days. I really don't. I mean, I it doesn't make any sense. But I'm getting into off topic. Let's bring back to Acts 4. I'm going to continue 32 through 35. Now the full number of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and no one said that any of the things that belonged to him was his own, but they had everything in common. And with great power the apostles were giving their testimony to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. There was not a needy person among them, for as many were the owners of lands or houses sold them, and brought proceeds of what was sold, and laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any has need. What information do these verses have about the early church community? Yeah. Yeah. This is how I reconcile communism, Jim. These people willingly participated in this community. They were willing participants. I'm from a part of Iowa south of the Amana colonies. About 18 miles away is a group of towns called the Amana colonies, and they were German immigrants who created a communist civilization here in America. And they willingly did so. They lived communally. And the industry, the weaving, the woodwork that happened there is phenomenal. It's the Quakers produced some wonderful handwork. The Shakers did some pretty cool stuff. The Amana colonies are right in there. They're not popular because it didn't happen in the East Coast. But the serviceable items that come out of the Amana colonies, and if you ever held an Amana tool of any kind, you're standing on the heritage of that. But they're people who, as adults, willingly said, I'm going to put all things in common. When somebody puts communism on me and seizes my belongings, my opinion of communism will differ. And that's all I've got to say about the politics side of it. But I don't think communism in and of itself is anything wrong with it if it's voluntarily entered into. Would it be hard to live in a community without individual property? Would it be? There's going to be people who take their allotment from the stores. They don't want to do any work to help replenish the stores. That's your hypothesis. You're not wrong. History history shows that you're right. If everybody was firing on all cylinders, would it be a delight? If there was no greed, no shirkers, no theft, would it work? We'd be in heaven. I like that because that works two ways. Okay, I think I'm supposed to bring this plane into a landing. Let's go out with some Bible. Ephesians 4, 1 through 6. Therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, I therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, with bearing one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as y'all were called to the hope that now belongs to your call. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. Okay, I'm going to leave you on that note. Thank you all so much for your attention today. I sure appreciate it. And apologies for my unrepentant capitalism, but I do think Jim said it best. You'd be in heaven if everybody did their part. I wouldn't care who owned the home or the plow or the land or the field if we all tilled it together and we shared the proceeds and gave it to everybody. Owning things just to own them is perverse. It's greedy. It's a version of evil. However, if everybody was on board and everybody trusted one another and everybody had the heart of God and the love of God, I think there'd be a place for a perfect community. I really think that would be a perfect place. Can it happen here on earth? If every person involved decided it should, I think you'd come pretty close. And I'm not asking you to turn your possessions into the church, though. I'd have a lot better hair if I were going to be a televangelist. Thank you guys so much. Y'all have a great morning.